heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
There has been a very wicked trend I've noticed in past months, and that is that whenever you have had unrest in a lot of cities, and you've seen this, where the media will predict, or some of your political operatives will get on the camera or the microphone, and they'll begin to predict that there's going to be some problems in the city that night, or they're gonna have to take precautions or call in the National Guard or that sort of thing, and that you need to prepare for the worst. So these are the predictions. Now, what I've always seen is that small group of people, the opportunists and those who have the criminal intent, they also are watching and listening to all of this. And what I've seen, and to me, this is always a license for them to get that bulletin report to say, okay, now we can call our buddies up or our friends and we can get out there and raise hell. It's a license. It's a license from the media and the powers to be that it's okay to go out there and ransack the businesses, bust their windows down. And it's okay to steal washing machines and television sets and other things because, hey, what the hell? At the end of the day, even if I do get locked up, they're not going to keep me anyways. They're going to release me back on the streets. A criminal or an opportunist, it's clearly to see only the upside, not the downside of criminalizing our cities and vandalizing our cities and the unrest that happens in these markets. So listen, it's a trend I've noticed for some time. It's pretty sick, but it's pretty real. And now let's fast forward to election 2020. Wow. And what are we seeing now again? Well, you're seeing the headlines everywhere, you know, how to tell if the election will get violent. Election and violence conflict experts see rising warnings. Election day violence is a threat. Here's how to prepare for it. Why the risk of election violence is high. That was from the Brookings Institute, but all the newspapers have come out. Fear of violence high ahead of election day. Americans fear in post-election violence. And, you know, again, whether Americans are really fearing post-election violence, the media is telling them that you're fearing post-election violence. So that's the way you're supposed to think, is to fear post-election violence. Because, listen, at the end of the day, isn't that what fear is? Isn't that just our imaginations, or in most cases, a figment of our imagination? Fear is what takes us over. It's what might happen that probably never will happen. But in these cases, they push it out there enough, it actually becomes the wave that everybody's waiting for, a wave to come. This is actually the media wave. It's the black wave of violence that they push out there and propagate to tear America apart. It's something I've been seeing now, the trends of this thing, and you're seeing them already as we come through the election. So what to prepare for and how to prepare for it. And then I'm hearing also reports of that there are actual plans in play and for some of these operative movements to get out there in the cities and distribute weapons and distribute things of that nature. These kinds of reports are being released as well. Yeah, so you have to begin to ask yourself, you know, how real is all of this? How much of this just is propaganda being pushed out there? Are they wishing for this for the nation? And why is this central to this election? Well, right away, when you ask that question, they'll start saying, well, that's Donald Trump's fault, man. I mean, he has been blamed for everything from day one. I mean, clearly. And, you know, a lot of that is because Donald Trump wasn't the PC president. He was the guy who came along and said, you know, we're going to drain the swamp. We're going to pull the plug out and let America see how evil they are and what their intent is. President Trump has done that. Many would argue he has made his job that much more difficult by doing that. One thing about this president is you don't have to guess what's on his mind. He puts it out there. It's different. It's not anything we've seen before. Totally, totally different. And it takes some getting used to, actually, up front. But when you consider that this was always going to be a job to drain any kind of a swamp, was never going to be easy. I mean, let's face it. I mean, just to get your hands on the plug, first of all, to pull the plug the hell out of the drain is a job unto itself. it's a job for an army, let alone one man, to pull that plug out. And so then, you know, the way I see it and I visualize it is that there's a good part of America, the Patriots that I'm speaking about here, the Make America Great Again movement, that have the president's back, and they're pulling the plug with the president. They're sort of like, and they're trying to pull the plug out of the swamp there. And it doesn't come easy because, you know, that it's a vacuum down to the bottom there of the swamp. You got, they're holding it in there, and you've got the sucking sound there of Washington politics and dirt and greed and all the grime that is filled in around the plug. And you know, you got to kind of jar all that loose, if you will. Yeah, you can just see that. You can see it, man. You can see it. They're trying to, and they're trying to yank the plug out of there, and they almost get it, and it pulls right back again. You know how they go, and it pulls right back again. And you see that fight. You see Trump pulling the plug, and he's yanking the son of a bitch, and everybody's behind him, and they're trying to yank it off. And that's what's happening with this election. It is a giant sucking sound, if there ever was one. That is the establishment in the swamp trying to pull it back down. It's a hell of a visual, but it is a visual I can see as clear as day. That's what I see happening right now. It's pretty crazy and sick as it sounds. It's actually what's taking place. And that's why you have this full-on assault right now. What's happening in the nation? Well, case in point, now I want to bring it to Pennsylvania a moment, okay? Because very, very interesting. And this is fascinating as hell to play to what I'm talking about with the establishment. Let me bring it right to the point of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, okay? All right? The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. This is the working man's paper now, okay? Let's be clear. Now, the editorial board with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So they come out with a piece here. They have a terrific piece here the other day in editorial about the election, The Man and the Record, it's called. The Man and the Record. It's quite interesting. They don't hold anything back in here, by the way, as an editorial piece should be. And they started off, you know, he's unpresidential. He's crude and unkind. He's just not a good man. These things and much worse are commonly said. Now, they're not saying that. But they're saying these things are commonly said of the president. His personality totally eclipses his record. That, again, is that giant sucking sound with drain in a swamp. I mean, listen, I'm just going to cut off here myself and say, well, how do you drain a swamp, people? How do you remove an establishment? You say, excuse me. Could you just move slightly out of the way, please? Yeah, just get a little out of the way from the drain, please. Yeah, right there. Thank you very much. Thank you very kindly. We want to remove the plug, please. We want you people to go right down the drain. Would you mind doing that? Sure. You know, there'll be ladies and gentlemen, right? Yes. Donald Trump, we'll kindly step aside so you can remove the plug and we'll get swallowed whole. Fat chance that that's going to happen, I'll tell you. So, you know, listen. So that's where then now, you know, you say, well, he's not presidential. People, how do you be presidential and drain a swamp and remove an establishment? Tell me how. It does not work. You cannot compute the two. It doesn't work. It just, it's not a black tie event. It's a put on your overhauls and let's kick their ass moment, man. And sometimes you put things out. Now, listen, the president, he's a truth sayer. He puts it out there. And I remember early on when he started doing that, I used to turn around and say, did he really say that? Yeah, he really said that. Wow. Okay, cool. And it takes a little getting used to. It took me a little getting used to early on. I have to be honest with you. In full disclosure, I didn't initially see it because it was not anything we've seen before. And we really didn't know if his actions were going to match the rhetoric and the talk of the typical political establishment, you know, where they and they do not. They sound like the, you know, the Snoopy shows, the Charlie Brown. You never really know what they're saying, you know, sounded like sort of that, you know, kind of thing. But with him, you kind of heard English. It wasn't Charlie Brown after all. He was Donald Trump. That was a different kind of show. We weren't really ready for that, were we now? I don't think so. We really weren't ready for it. But we all took a little getting used to, and a lot of the people, the Patriots out there, it kind of caught on like a wildfire. Like, okay, we can get into this. We like this idea of draining a swamp, Mr. President? Sure. We're on to it. We'll get in there again, drain the swamp. You know, again, back to the fight, right? Pull that plug out of there and let them get swallowed whole right down the drain. And pretty much. So back to this Pittsburgh Post-Gazette here. Very interesting. You're gonna enjoy this here a little bit because it really is a hell of a read here. Okay. So they go on to say, well, you know, isn't the real question whether he has been taking the country and the economy of this region in the right direction these last 4 years? And they ask one of the most important questions that should be asked of this election. And it's this: can we separate the man from the record? Can we separate the man from the record? And they put a little caveat underneath that will disturb some of you, but in full disclosure, they say, we share the embarrassment of millions of Americans who are disturbed by the president's unpresidential manners and character, his rudeness and put-downs and bragging and bending of the truth sometimes. All right. So they put it right there. None of this can be justified. They say, we're not trying to justify it, basically. The president's behavior often has diminished his presidency and the presidency. Most Americans want a president who makes them proud. But, you know, that's an arguable point now that Gazette puts out there, because a lot of people are very proud of Donald Trump. So I don't really agree with that. But I understand, I guess, what they're saying. But this next sentence is interesting. Well, this next little paragraph here. We, too, prefer the first-class temperament and demeanor of a Winston Churchill, a Dwight Eisenhower, a Franklin Roosevelt, a Ronald Reagan, or a Barack Obama, whom this newspaper enthusiastically supported in 2008 and 2012. None of them are on the ballot this year, though. Now, they did support them in 2012. In fact, I remember all these newspapers like the Gazette here in Pittsburgh all went to Obama. I mean, I remember it. All the papers were very enthusiastic about, you know, hope and change. And so, you know, Ronald Reagan was a statesman. He's interesting. He was an interesting man. He wasn't up against the swamp like we are today, however. Remember, it's easy to put this out there, the Gazette, but people, I would argue back with you. I mean, if you want to bring it back to Ronald Reagan, we've had almost 30 years of BS and layering of grime and filth and slime all over that swamp, all over the drain. So maybe if Ronald Reagan was here today, maybe he'd have to be like Trump. How do you like that? Or maybe if Eisenhower was here today or whatever. You know, Mike, we got 30 years of more slime, grime, corrupt, and, you know, just evil all over the swamp floor, just all around that drain that's trying to be pulled out. So that should tell you plenty right there. Okay. So they say, let's look at the Trump record. Okay. So here we go now. Under Donald Trump, the economy, pre-COVID boom like no time since the 1950s, and even before that, quite frankly, but they're saying the 1950s. Look at your 401k over the past 3 years. Unemployment for Black Americans, lower than it had ever been. Under any president of either party, on any planet, I would even say. That's my part I add to it there. So under Mr. Trump, our trade relationships have vastly improved and our trade deals have been rewritten. Well, he ran on that. The president ran on all kinds of things that he has fulfilled to the demise of the swamp creatures. Thanks to him, Middle America is on the map again. All right. Has Mr. Trump done enough for the struggling fellow citizens? No, but he recognized them. Maybe he was not articulate, but he recognized their pain. Well, he did recognize, and he did as much as he could do for the struggling fellow citizens, Gazette. I mean, he is one man in a sea of corruption. I mean, gee Louise, what kind of a magic wand do you think he has, you know? No one ever has asked the American people or the people in flyover country if they wanted to send their jobs abroad. Oh, no kidding. Until Mr. Trump. Right? Well, that was whole Obama's legacy, was sending, and Biden. That's what he did. He was in bed with China. He was sleeping with China. I mean, come on, people. This guy he feeds off of that. It's you know, it's like the bed bugs in a shitty hotel you're in. That's what Biden was feeding off of with his international relationships with his family, you know. Oh, boy, I'll tell you what. He also kept his promise to appoint originalists to the Supreme Court of the United States. What a novel idea. Amazing, huh? Truly amazing. His third appointment, Amy Coney Barrett, is the best of all, a jurist whose mind and character and scholarship are first class. Now, this is the Post-Gazette saying this, people. That's wild, isn't it? I mean, this is not exactly a right stronghold, but they could still see the value of an Amy Coney Barrett, the editorial board. That's cool. That's cool. This should give you some hope that even those people can see some truth in all of this nonsense. Now, they go on to say Donald Trump is not Churchill, to be sure, but he gets things done. But then again, Churchill isn't here today. I would say to you, neither is Ronald Reagan, and neither do they have 30 more years of swamp grime and corruptness. So it's not always fear if you don't put things in context of where we were headed as a nation, because we were headed in some pretty dark roads. And a lot of that is because of Bush, Clinton, Bush, but then 8 years of Obama and Biden policies. That's why you had all of that. That's why we were in the position we were in. And that's why America gave the keys to the car, filled it up with gas, gave a few extra tanks of gas and said, okay, Donald Trump, have your way. Let's fix this thing. Drain the swamp and we'll grab the plug and we'll pull. And we'll pull. And we'll pull this thing and we'll bang this swamp up. And so, listen, my fellow Americans, you can see the record, the man on the record that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette talks about. And you can see why they are there endorsing. I mean, Donald Trump, that he is the best man to win this election, which is pretty remarkable. Because you don't normally see that from a publication like this. And this newspaper has not supported a Republican for president since 1972. But we believe Mr. Trump, for all his faults, is the better choice this time. We respect and understand those who feel otherwise. We wish that we could be more enthusiastic. And we hope the president can become more dignified and statesmanlike. Each American must make up his or her mind and do what he or she thinks is best for the community and the republic. Vote your conscience. Whatever happens, believe in the country. Yeah, well, that's the way they end that, you know. And, of course, they talk about China and all kinds of things in the piece. Interesting read there. If you get a chance to read it there, you'll find it fascinating. Anyways, I'm pretty juiced up, pretty lit up today. Michael Johns is with me. And listen, we, again, as always, all oars are in the water as we all roll forward and pass this election cycle now and look for what's on the other side of this America here. We'll be in it together, whatever happens here. We're going to take a quick pause, be back with Michael Johns, more Voice of a Nation, just on the other side of the pause.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
I've had people telling me in the last many days things like, make sure you have groceries, make sure you have ammunition, make sure you have... And a lot of that plays to what I was talking about earlier with all of these media, whatever you want to call it, these warning signs that we've seen so many times before. and they kind of put it out there, and then it happens. It's the same thing when you see unrest in our cities, when there's some sort of an altercation, and they say, well, there's going to be altercations or problems in Minneapolis, or this is going to happen in Portland tonight. They're basically, to me, they're telling the public, well, or not so much you all out there, but they're telling those that piece of the, you know, those criminal intent, actually, that people want to get out, and opportunists is what I would say. And it's an invitation for them to get out there and raise hell and burn cities down and create violence and that sort of thing. Let's bring on Michael Johns and talk about some of that. Michael, I've seen a pattern here. I've seen just the way it's trended in past months and really last couple of years. The media tends to hype up what they think is going to happen, or I don't know if it's what they want to happen or what they think is going to happen, actually, when a lot of this unrest happens with a signature event, whatever it might be. Surprisingly, we're going to look back at this point now. We're seeing major cities that have boarded up, and this is all being advertised to the public. And of course, you know, you have to, these people who are all doing these dire warnings without really knowing what's going to happen. To me, it's sort of an invitation for the opportunist or the criminal intent, whatever, to get out there and do what the media or the operatives have said, well, this is what is going to happen right after the election kind of thing. Do you see how that can really come back to bite us? And I think that's a warning sign right now. We should be concerned with that, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I think, you know, particularly on as we are on the eve of a major election, you have all sorts of what I would almost call voter suppression efforts that are going on. And implicit in all of this is, hey, don't go vote for Trump, or, you know, cities might burn again. And I think the American people have had it with this extortion. It's essentially what it is. And the nature of these, you know, predictions may actually be on target, but no American should fear for their safety or let any of this deter them from going out to vote. There's every reason to believe everything will be safe and secure in that standpoint. But I think that's precisely what is actually transpiring here, though I don't diminish the possibility that a political movement that, in my judgment, represents, you know, really a incredibly small percentage of the American people is likely to cause problems if they don't like the outcome, or even if they do like the outcome.
That's right. That's right. And that small percentage, though, they are obnoxious and they are violent is the problem. It's always that small group that create chaos for the rest of everybody. I've actually heard, and I wonder if you've heard anything about this. I've heard reports that there are actual plans in play. No, as you just stated a moment ago, no matter who claims victor, that there are plans in play to create major unrest in our nation, and they're pushing that out there. What about that? Are you hearing anything about actual plans being laid down for that?
Yeah, plenty of speculation about that. I mean, detailed speculation, including maps of major cities and things of that nature that have been circulated among the Antifa and other violent organizations involved in all this. So I think, you know, it's time ultimately that local, state, federal officials stand up to this and, you know, put an end to it. Now would be a good time to do that. You know, I think we'll have, if we do have a reaction of that nature, I think it's increasingly unlikely that we're going to have a definitive answer to this election tomorrow, unless Trump really overperforms in Pennsylvania, which is possible. I think things are trending well there. But given the days that they have to basically assemble the vote, I think that'll, you know, possibly push this into a multi-day voter assembly an effort, and possibly not have an actual winner tomorrow night. But I think, you know, increasingly Pennsylvania is proving so absolutely vital, particularly as Florida looks so positive for the president.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking here now, back to Victor, you have a winner and a loser with any election here. And I'm thinking, like, those who are doing all this prediction, I mean, you just look at the headlines right now. You just type in violence election on any search engine, and you'll get more than you asked for or bargained for as far as all the stories being run, I mean, everywhere, all over the country. I'm getting a really odd sense right now because of the this push into violence that has been perpetrated on the American people for some time. I'm getting the sense that this election is a real turning point in our nation, and more than just Trump now I'm talking about, but where that violence is the call to action for those people that you say, those small groups who a lot of times are being funded by outside forces, even outside this nation, Michael, all that money that comes in. We've seen that with a lot of the unrest in the cities where they have trucks lined up and bricks and water bottles and things like that. And I'm just sensing this election is different for all of those reasons. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you worded it well. There's very powerful forces at play here. There's lots of money at play on the far left that sees this as a moment of opportunity. And, you know, we covered recently some of the worst case outcomes of this electoral process. So you can, you know, if you're tuned into this and you're glued into the fact that that the courts and the Senate could end up being dramatically changed. And the president, if Biden was able to prevail, a very willing participant in this radical left agenda, if he even hangs in there as president. I mean, who knows? When I look at the campaign schedule that he's kept up here over the last week, mm-hmm. I think it continues to be reflective of a guy who's, physical or mental capacity is greatly diminished in his ability to do the job. I think you and I have both bluntly stated that we don't believe he is up to the job. That's the observation of even Obama's personal physician who commented on it. And, so it's another complicating factor, obviously, in this election is you're really not voting for Joe Biden, in my view, for a four-year term. I think it's increasingly unlikely he serves a four-year term, even if he would win, which I'm hopefully won't. And I have a path to victory, if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah, let's hear that path to victory.
So you need 270 electoral votes to become president of the United States. I think it's safe for us to assume that there's about 163 electoral college votes in red states that are reasonably safe for President Trump. There's a good number of states that I think we would call battleground states that are leaning Trump, that he's going to have to win to become president. And I believe he will win. That includes Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, Iowa, where polls show he just took a pretty considerable lead, Arizona, and Georgia.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you say 163 that
are safe red states, right, in my view, that will, right, that we can reasonably safely count, okay, on as going for
Got
Trump.
It. So if we have a starting point of 163 in the red, typically, and I think you'll agree with this, typically the starting point with, again, how does the blue state start? You know, where does the Democrat electoral vote start? From previous history, as I recall, Michael, it's usually around a couple of hundred because they have the big prizes of California and New York. I mean, these are the big victories here already before you even start the race. I remember they typically have a starting point somewhere around a couple of hundred. Maybe it's 190 or something like that, but I think it's 20, 30 more votes.
Yeah, I think it's safe to assume it's greater than the 163.
It is. That's my point.
Right. And if that's, yeah, well taken.
I just want people to understand that's kind of
the danger of such a,
exactly,
you know, these, of
exactly,
New York and California.
Exactly.
Continuing to, you know, not really think through these options. And what happens in turn is it's bad for those states too, because they end up getting neglected in the campaign in the politics. So California and New York, the perception is they're solid Democrat, mm-hmm, states, and they end up sometimes not getting the level of attention. Those are two states that need a whole lot of attention. So anyway, Maine and Nebraska, as you probably know, break their electoral counts into congressional districts, second congressional district in both those states, I believe reasonably safely goes for Trump. That brings you up to about 260, counting in the five states I mentioned in those two congressional districts on top of the 163, leaving Pennsylvania with 20 electoral college votes, mm-hmm, Michigan with 16, mm-hmm, and with Wisconsin with 10. So in theory, Trump would need to win one of those three to be reelected. Mm-hmm. And as I look at those three, I think Pennsylvania looks increasingly promising for the president. He spent an extraordinary amount of time in the state, you know, multiple visits and throughout it. He was just endorsed by the Pittsburgh.
Amazing.
The Pittsburgh newspaper, which hasn't endorsed a Republican since Nixon in 1972, quite an accomplishment, and I think a reflection of his commitment to the manufacturing base in this country and his position on energy and his willingness not to end fracking, which is such a huge employer in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But he needs one of those three. So Michigan, Wisconsin. I think I look at this right now, and there's, you know, obviously assumptions baked in here. This election, by and large, for Trump supporters, is tomorrow. I think when you look at the mail-in ballots, which roughly 90 million have been cast to date, those are a good chunk of the Biden supporters. I think you can safely assume that, that Democrats are more inclined to do mail-in ballots than Republicans and independents. And, and you look at a good number of states, Pennsylvania is one of them, where the mail-in ballots are not quite coming in at the level that they had anticipated and expected. That's one trend. Second trend, which I clearly see developing, and you can see it reflected in the president's emphasis on this over the last few days, is what could be a really seismic shift in African-American voting patterns, and particularly among African-American men, where Biden's history and his rhetoric calling African-American youth predators, we've talked in general terms about the crime bill that he sponsored. I mean, not voted for, sponsored. It would not have existed without Joe Biden.
Right.
But the details of it are hugely relevant because it was bad in a whole bunch of ways. One of which was that it provided federal funding for states that imposed harsher sentencing. Mm-hmm. Now, sentencing, you know, in my judgment, you need to maintain some flexibility on sentencing because no two cases are ultimately the same. You've got people who have, you know, who represent greater degrees of threat to the community. You've got people who have circumstances surrounding their current situation of varying degrees of remorse. That's why you have sentencing hearings, and it's why you should have some degree of flexibility afforded judges on the sentencing. But this created an artificial financial incentive for judges to impose very strict and harsh sentences, including for nonviolent crimes. And that ended up, I think I saw statistics showing that, you know, over 30% of African-American men between 18 and 35 were either incarcerated or on parole at one point following that bill. That's an extraordinary number. And the ripple effect negatively that it had through African-American communities was immense because you don't just incarcerate one person, you know, it affects everybody who's close to them and imposes financial burdens on a household. It creates a fatherless home. And I think in a lot of ways, you can pin a lot of the plight of particularly urban African-American communities back on Biden. And then you add on top of that he's been a very willing participant in bringing foreign labor into these urban areas that already have employment challenges, making it even more difficult to get jobs and diminishing wages in those areas, killing off manufacturing opportunities, which are really the highest compensating opportunities available for those without college degrees.
Yeah.
300,000 of those jobs killed in the 8 years of Biden. And
What all that equates to is a recipe for disaster is what that equates to, is it what you say there by bringing all that in, and then you have the unrest. It is going to be quite interesting to see where the Black community goes in the 2020 race. And from all the conversations we've had, Michael, and the people we've talked to, there is something happening in Black America.
Yes, it's real.
There's something happening.
Yeah, it could be the biggest story coming. I mean, obviously, the outcome of the election is the biggest story. But I think the second biggest story is that the grasp that the Democrat Party has had on the African-American community for decades now is ending. They've taken that vote for granted, and they've done very little.
Yeah.
They've taken their votes, and they've done nothing 100%. For them in return.
100%.
And I think they've awoken to that reality, and now they have a president in Trump who actually did put focus on those issues over the last 4 years and delivered some fairly significant results.
Well, let me say that I think that that message, we've had a lot of key prominent Black entertainers and very popular Black people who have spoken up, Black Americans, who have spoken up about what we're talking about here. But I will say that I think they haven't been able to keep that information hidden and canned from a lot of the people. They're now onto it. My sense is that Black America they are waking up now to what's been happening with the Democrats, socialists, and how they've taken advantage of that community. I've been saying for months now, I'm going to be really fascinated to see where these numbers are after the election. To me, that's going to be a telltale sign in so many ways, including Hispanic America, and including all of these various demographic groups here in our country here. But the other telltale sign of this, which you've been talking about just a moment ago, and we're seeing that there's a turnout the vote problem on the left because the reason for that, Michael, is there's a lack of excitement for Joe Biden. A lot of people are being forced to get to the polls. And if anything, there's a piece of the populace. It's sort of an anti-Trump vote, if it's anything. It's not a pro-Biden
vote. Well, I don't think professional politicians in this day and age are inspiring. I don't think the American people are looking for people who have spent their life in politics to reward them simply because they're next in line for the job. And you saw a lot of that arrogance in Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign. The American people pushed back on it. Her position was, well, you know, what do you mean I'm behind? I mean, you can recall some of those interviews and speeches where she almost expressed confusion because it almost like she was entitled to have this. Whereas, you know, in reality, the American people are looking at their individual situations and their individual circumstances and the issues they're confronting and making decisions on that. Now, you have a guy with a 47-year track record who's accomplished nothing except really this major incarceration bill, which disproportionately hit African-Americans, nothing else, failed throughout it, and looming concerns, I think, about family corruption and possible criminality.
And really, Hillary's whole program was she came across to the American people like she was the heir apparent, Michael, is what happened. And you're right, like it was expected somehow. And I think the people spoke up about that. It's a little different, the cards this time with Joe Biden, but there is the turnout, the vote is going to be a key point here, and it's going to play to the Hispanic vote, to the Black vote and all of that, because if they don't get out and vote for Biden, it washes it out because they're not enthused.
And let me say, I think there's story after story that's emerged with Biden campaign operatives responsible for that get out the vote. In those constituencies who are complaining about being under-resourced and ignored. Perfect example is the article in Politico that I referenced recently with you on what's going on in Miami, where President Trump's faring very well.
That's right.
And you have Biden campaign officials saying, we've been pushing for resources to get out African-American and Hispanic votes. And let me just say, when you ignore those constituencies in the campaign, when you need their vote, you're certainly going to ignore them when you're in a governmental position
of
authority. And I think that's kind of a large part of what's transpiring here.
Yeah, it's a hell of a point there. I'm a little perplexed as to why they are under-resourced and why they're not helping them out since—
Take it for granted. They take it for granted. That's why.
Well,
because
but
they look at, they have certain amount of, he's going to have $1 billion here to allocate, and he wants to put it into these battleground states and creating this image that somehow he's Joe, the friendly uncle from around the corner. Which, of course, he's not. He's been dealing with some of the most ominous, crime-ridden, horrifying and tyrannical figures in the world in what certainly appear to be pay-to-play schemes.
You know, they're flush with cash. They've certainly had plenty of money. The Democrats have their machine. So you'd think they would have invested in those communities to ensure the vote, Michael. It's a little perplexing that they didn't figure that out. Back with more Voice of a Nation with Michael John. My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. We join you back here at this historical moment in time. And we all feel a little juiced here, a little anxious as well. It's a combination of, what I try to tell you out there, being excited and juiced for everything that's happening. But also there is this uncertainty, and everybody is a little cautious. Like any race, somebody's going to win, Michael, and somebody's going to lose. And part of the country is definitely going to be teed off. And part of the problem we've been talking about in the theme is that, what do they do with that? You know, instead of taking that anger or energy in them and putting it to the next race, which is what we always did, you know, with our country. Now they take it out in the city square and they tear things apart because they think they have a license to do that. And this is a pivotal point I'm going to say to you. I think people feel out there, and I talked about this up front of the monologue, I think people feel that they have a license, these opportunists. They get a license from the media and the political operatives again, and they feel like they're empowered to go out and do it. Somehow it's forgivable. It's the same thing with this unrest in a city when they're stealing televisions and washing machines and rolling them across the parking lot. It's the same thing here with this election. I'm seeing the same damn headlines and the same damn stories that say, well, this is what's going to happen after the election. So that's to me, you know what you might as well do? It's what I talked about up front. You might as well have headlines that say, get your free washer, free television and free snacks just after the 3rd of November. They ought to just run those headlines, Michael.
Right. Well, and some of these Democrat states are actually, you know, legalizing or not even arresting individuals with criminal theft up to a certain amount, such as in, you know, San Francisco and whatnot, which is just like creating further incentives. These are very illogical policies all the way around. I think that, you know, I really think, though, from the standpoint of the election, this thing breaks down into these first great 3 years of incredible economic and other successes for the president, combined with this 33.1% GDP growth in the third quarter that just was announced on Friday, that you see basically diminished and underplayed in the media. I certainly hope the American people see that. It's an incredible accomplishment, and millions upon millions of jobs have been created since this pandemic hit. You can see light at the end of the tunnel at this point. And, you know, so to the extent that the first 3 years get forgotten and American voters only focus on, you know, the pandemic and the street riots, I am hopeful that they're going to see that by and large, there were incredible efforts taken by this administration, you know, in the rapid development of this vaccine, in the testing that had to come out of nowhere since we didn't have access to the vaccine and to the virus itself, and to the extraordinary mobilization of health resources across the country and the travel ban, and all of these initiatives designed to support local and health facilities and hospitals. What else could he have done, really, at the end of the day? It was a very deadly pandemic. It's proven that way all around the world. And ultimately, the bottom line is China is responsible. They're either responsible by negligence or by, you know, criminal engagement of its release. Mm-hmm. And increasingly more likely when you start adding up all the evidence on one side and on the other side, tilts the balance in favor of a suggestion that they appear to have consciously unleashed this on the world, presumably for political and economic benefit.
Well, when we look at COVID, and we know that has been I hate to say it this way, but it really has been the prize award of the left. They've used it as their
perfect storm.
It really is. There. Oh, yeah, Michael. You've heard, I've been so outspoken about this, as you know, but it has, I call it the handy dandy virus from China. So they've taken this handy dandy virus and they have more than politicized. In fact, they've done everything with it that they have suggested Trump has done. But, you know, if you step back a minute, Michael, just let's step back a moment here. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, okay. Now, nobody reasonably minded has got to figure that another national lockdown is going to be helpful to our nation by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you just look around the world, you look at what Trump has done with the virus. You also
look at Southern Europe. I mean, they locked down real hard, and now this is coming back, unfortunately.
Sure.
The harshest of protective measures that have been taken have not proven uniformly successful. Simultaneously, you know, you look in Northern Europe with a good number of countries that had that took vastly less restrictive measures that have done reasonably well. I think this is, you know, it has a lot to do with the demography of the individuals that are infected and the sort of saturation rate of the virus itself, meaning highly populated areas tend to probably get affected more heavily and more negatively than, say, more rural and suburban areas.
Yeah, the point I really want to make here is this, is that if you take a look, step back again, and you look at Democrats and Republicans, and you look at Biden handling COVID and Trump handling COVID, moving forward now I'm speaking about, and you realize anybody, again, with an objective mind, Michael, is going to look at this. And what do you really want? Does anybody really perceive? I mean, what's Biden's strategy? Everything that he has even put out there, you and I have mocked on and talked about the fact Trump has done and then some. And we know he did the whole lockdown up front. We get that. But here's the thing. If you think about it, and here's my point. If you think about it in terms of a month from now, 3 months from now, Michael, 6 months from now, next year, and you think about what kind of a leader do we want in the White House that is going to be able to draw a future path forward? Well, I got to tell you right now, Trump is not going to take this lion down. He'll fight the virus. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
I think President Trump realizes that there's two battles at play here. One is to get the economy back functioning so we don't have disastrous and enduring costs to this country's vibrancy and economic prosperity. I mean, you could, this sort of thing that could drive people into permanent states of unemployment, putting lots of particularly small businesses out of business. And I'll tell you, as a consumer of business media, which I notice a lot of people in politics don't spend a lot of time reading, I'm amazed how it's just like every single article I'm reading, it talks about how business, commerce, consumer relations will never be the same after this, that this is a fundamentally transforming moment, not just politically and in a public health way, which is what gets most of the attention, but the business may never be the same.
And why are they saying that? Why are they saying it will never be the same?
Because everyone, as I read this, I'm always thinking everyone's got an agenda, and I'm reading these things about how, you know, all of the money that's now going to pour into data management. And I'm thinking, wow, how convenient for those people that are, selling data management services. I felt like it was the whole 2000 thing all over again. Remember that whole, all the fear in 1999 that the banking systems were going to crash and then every, major business computer was going to crash and we would have a complete collapse of data and go into turmoil. And
Y2K.
All this money was invested. Y2K. And then, you know, healthcare went through the HIPAA thing, which was overblown. Yep. And it just seems like we kind of create scandals to sell.
Oh, yeah. It's
particularly technical. But so I do feel like, you know, that the issue is we got one candidate here, look, in Trump, who wants to get this economy back and running and also understands the public health issues and is listening to the science. I'm sick of hearing Joe Biden say that. By the way, if we had been listening to the science, we would have been rejecting the use of masks, you know, for the considerable first part of this pandemic, when the CDC and the World Health Organization, the two institutions you would look for the science, were saying, do not wear them.
Yeah, don't wear
them. Okay, so I find it immensely complex and confusing that individuals are now emerging to somehow suggest that there was a uniform position on that. Back then, there was no such position that was held. They were slow to it. And again, a lot of this comes back on China's unwillingness to allow us to get the samples of the virus, which would have been helpful, to communicate with the individuals who observed the first cases of it, to interview the people who have now suddenly disappeared in China, who blew the whistle on these things. Those would all have been incredibly useful. Instead, you know, China, after unleashing this whole thing, basically just said, we didn't do it. It's probably the United States did it. I mean, it's a very act of incredible irresponsibility, at the very least, evil and as you suggested the other day, biological warfare in the worst case.
It absolutely is. It's been that, and it's been a mind warfare as well. They've been playing with everybody's minds here and their brains, sadly. I want to talk about Fauci, Anthony Fauci, for a moment here. Fauci has had a very, you know, precarious relationship with the White House, and it's been that way from the beginning, but it's not a stretch when you look at Fauci's past, his background, his policies, his political stripe. It stands to reason. And again, Fauci wasn't hired or elected by the president. He wasn't appointed. He was there already, Michael, and people forget
that. He came in the Carter administration.
He's been there
the
a long time. Yeah. Back when the pilgrims landed somewhere, and a long time, Michael. And so Fauci now has been, I'll tell you, a lot of these people, like you said a moment ago, they play politics with the media. That's what it all is. And they play these mind games to try to connect with a lot of the people out there, and certainly people that are not informed, because they're a lot of people are busy living life, and they don't follow this stuff day by day, hour by hour, as some of us do. And I understand that. It doesn't make them stupid. It just means they have a life, Michael, outside of this world. I mean, everything isn't tied to this. But people like Fauci and others, I think they put these messages out to try to get those people, and the media runs the headlines all too willingly. Now we're seeing the last few days, all of these headlines with Fauci, and he's come out and he said, and I noticed this a few days ago, a whole lot of hurt, he says. Those are his words now, Fauci. He's now doing these predictions. He's got a warning signs he's putting out there, realizing, which plays to the Democrat machine, and Fauci is out there helping them right now. But the White House is so put off with this right now. President Trump has come out. In fact, the New York Times has a piece here. Trump suggests he may fire Fauci after the election. And there's so many, you know, Dr. Anthony Fauci unleashes on White House coronavirus strategy. You know, White House accuses top scientist Fauci of, you know, fear mongering. And so you see, there's this division now. And I think he will not be there after the election if Trump is reelected, Michael. But I think Fauci is playing politics right now with COVID. What do you say to that?
Yeah, people who typically say that they're not playing politics or don't want to see politics played are usually the ones most engaged in it, has been my notice. And, you know, the one observation, I mean, I have a bunch of observations on Fauci. Let me just give you one thing that is troublesome to me. I don't doubt his capabilities, though. Let's be clear, he's not a practicing physician right now, just because you're a medical doctor. When you're in a bureaucracy for decades and decades, you can very easily see that you lose touch with the actual patient dynamic, which is such a key part of any component of medicine, and particularly in infectious disease medicine. But I look at this and I see, you know, what troubles me the most was, I think, his insistence that he not be used in the Trump commercials. And my position on that is, if you're going to serve in running, you know, a major agency in an administration, and you don't, you know, you feel it's somehow bad for your image, or you feel misused or somehow mistreated because you're in a photo with the president of the United States, you ought to leave that administration. I feel the same way about all these anonymous leaks that have come out of the administration, from individuals who are probably disgruntled employees or were never with Trump in the first place. If you don't like it, don't leak disparaging comments on the president. It's not changing anyone's view in this day and age. Leave, go, just leave. I mean, you're not required to be there. You know, you need people in this administration who are competent and capable, first and foremost. I'm not diminishing that, but also who have a general alliance with the president's priorities, because, you know, these priorities and visions are important and they have to resonate through the administration. You got to have everyone sort of aligned with them in how they approach their workday, or you end up you know, sort of at odds internally, and things get bogged down and they don't move forward like they should. And I think a second term of Trump is going to, I think, be very honed in on that. I think this president's awakened to how important that really is.
Yeah, that was a really telltale sign when Fauci came out and did what you say there, and really spoke out about the being in that commercial where they captured something he had said or did and put it in there. And that was a telltale sign. Now you see with all these reports and everything coming out, it's pretty clear if anybody had any questions, which I did not, as to where Fauci sat in all of this, you now know where he sat, right, Michael? I mean, you know, and it is what it is now. And
Remember what Peter Navarro said, and I never heard anyone say he had it wrong. He said every piece of major advice that Fauci had offered during this pandemic was wrong. And I think implicit in that is the fact that much of what Peter Navarro said and offered, including his support on the travel ban, was right. Fauci, for instance, is, as I understand it, at least based on reporting, was an opponent originally of the China travel ban. He was an opponent well-known of the use of masks. He was out publicly advising people not to use them, not to overreact. This was the guidance he offered. Yeah. And it's important, you know, it gets to be inside baseball in a way, but, you know, in a sense, American voters have to be able to distinguish between the problems that exist in an administration and the problems that exist with the president, because there's a lot in the former and not too many with the latter.
Mm-hmm. And Navarro caught hell for saying that too, remember?
Yeah, he did.
Look at all of this thing with open eyes, no matter who you are or where you come from. And you have to realize, I mean, who would take whatever steps would be needed to take to secure our safety and our salvation as a nation? Who would do that? You'll have to know it would be President Trump. There's no doubt in my mind. He is a leader above leaders. He's going to do whatever that needs to be done, no matter what it is. And we'll see that in the days and the weeks ahead after this election, no matter what happens. And as they're all predicting unrest and all predicting the free televisions and free washes and all of that, we'll see how that comes out. But I would say that you're probably going to have the 1807 Insurrection Act come in the light of day. I think the president is going to have to move very fast and swift to secure and to put down the unrest. And that's where we're at. And that's what you've got to do in a civilized society. And it's going to happen here. And we talked about that in front of the program, and I'm going to end right there. And big thank you to Michael Johns, as always, here. And so we're here, people. We're here at the moment of truth for our nation. In the hours and hours ahead, we'll find out what exactly America has chosen. This is the way our representative republic works. And there will be an electoral college victor somewhere. There will be math involved in this. And the votes will be tallied, and we will have a victor. And again, this race, to me, you've been listening to me in the past days, as so center and so central to our theme of good and evil. I mean, there's nothing more important right now than the fight for victory to secure our great nation. And that is to have a civil society, a society who respects law and order, a society who respects thy fellow opinion and the diversity of thought and free speech. And our Constitution is, more than anything, is the most important thing to keep the fabric of America honest and true, the way it should be, the way we have lived our lives. And so I leave you there now in the final hours here, and wish you Godspeed always. Thank you for joining me and being on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.